Okay, so as I indicated the end of last week, I wanted to just look at two psukim today. So we are getting to psukim, and they will increase in time. And they are separated by large parts of the book. One pasuk is in Perek Gimel, and the other pasuk is in Perek Yotes. But with the commentary of the Vilna Gaon that we're going to look at today, you will see how he interweaves the ideas and brings in many other psukim in Mamorei Chazal to explain them, and you will see, as it were, a deeper meaning to what these psukim say. Let's look at the first pasuk first. That is in Perek Gimel, pasuk Vav. The Rambam himself, both in the Mishneh Torah and in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, talks about this pasuk as a foundational pasuk in the life of a Jew. And I'll explain why he says it's that important. The pasuk says, "B'chol derecheha da'eyu." Know the Almighty, know Hashem, know Him. It doesn't even use a name of Hashem here. Da'eyu, know Him. V'hu, and that He, that entity that you have striven to know in all of your ways, yiyasher or chosecha, he will straighten out the path of life that you need to walk. So what does it mean to know God in all of your ways? So the Rambam explains in Mishneh Torah the following idea. Some people think in order to serve God you must sever your connection to the physical world. You must become an ascetic. You must fast. You must spend all of your time exclusively in prayer and Limud HaTorah. And there is no room in life for the notion of physical pleasure. There is no room in life, one might think, for the notion of aesthetics or beauty or art or music. The Rambam says that is a very big mistake. The meaning of the verse, "B'chol derecheha da'eyu," means that even when you're so-called off-duty, so to speak, even when you're not doing an overtly religious act, even when you're cooking or going to a concert or going to a museum or jogging or, let's say, men playing basketball, whatever it would be, one can transform the nature of that act into an act of holiness if they do so for the purpose of serving Hashem. So so the Rambam writes, the Rambam specifically talks about beauty and aesthetics. The Rambam says, it is well known that when a person contemplates physically beautiful things, like art or whatever it is, that calms the spirit, that relaxes a person, that drains tension. When a person is in a relaxed, serene state of mind, they are able to serve God better. They daven with more enthusiasm. They do mitzvos. The person goes to work. On one level, all you're doing is working or making money or whatever it is. But a person can change the nature of that act by their intention, that I'm doing it to be able to support my family so they could serve Hashem. I'm doing it to make a kiddush Hashem in the workplace by the honesty and the derech eretz with which I behave. I'm doing it to give tzedakah. I'm doing it to be able to have hachnas orchem. So then the Rambam says, every single action you do now becomes a service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Instead of creating a dichotomy between the religious and the non-religious, one can convert everything into an act of worship. Now there is a famous folktale. It's not from Chazal. And it's interesting. It's a story that comes in Jewish, Christian, and Muslim, and even Hindu versions. So this is one of those world stories. It's hard to know the origin. There is a Jewish version of the story. I suspect it probably is not of Jewish origin, but they Judaized it in one way or the other. And the story goes about three people who made their living as stonecutters. And all they did from morning to night was cut stones and carry stones hour after hour, week after week, month after month, year after year. So somebody asked each of the three people, what do you do with your life? So one person described his life as a person who simply cuts stones from morning to night till I drag myself home half dead. I eat a piece of bread, I drop dead to go to sleep, I wake up the same morning and I do it again. His life is described as hopelessness, uselessness, a wasted life. Another person said, every morning I go so I can put bread on the table to support my family because I love my wife and my children. And this is the way that I can take care of those that I care about. That's a different level. It's the same stone cutting, but it's a totally different perspective. The third person said, this is where the different religious versions come in. I'm building a cathedral to God. I'm building the Taj Mahal. You can't say I'm building the base of Mikdash. You're not allowed to cut stones, but I'm building a shul. Right? So whatever version you want, you can use. But the point basically is that what defines the meaning of our lives is not what we do objectively, but the perspective and the purpose that we bring to it. And you can have two people who are doing the identical thing. And one person, it's a meaningless activity or even a sinful activity. And for the other person, it might be the greatest way of worshiping HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam says, "B'chol jiracheha da'eyu, know God in all of your ways." Now, in the Sifrei Chassidus, they took it in a bit of a more radical idea. The Rambam would basically say, let's take art as an example. The Rambam would basically say, when you look at art, or you walk in a park, or you look at a beautiful garden, and you're getting relaxed and calmed, and your temper is abating, have kavana that I'm doing this to serve Hashem better. That's what the Rambam would say. The Baal Shem Tov, and the later Gedolei Chassidus, made it a bit more radical. And they said, when you sense beauty in the world, think of Hashem as the source of that beauty. And turn your desire towards God. Now, the reason why I say it's radical, that there were some versions that even applied this in ways that the Vilna Gaon didn't like very much, such as how a man would look at a woman, etc. I don't want to be marich in it. But you can imagine that it gets a little controversial and a little delicate in that way. But the Baal Shem Tov says, all beauty in the world is a reflection of divinity. And therefore you turn whatever joy you get from the physicality of the world, know that Hashem is the source of that joy. And then even a mundane, secular feeling becomes the worship of God. And all of this is this verse, B'chol jiracheha da'eyu. And that is why, in reality, a spiritual person should be a person that is attuned to beauty. Again, it's an interesting phenomenon that sometimes we associate the spiritual temperament with the person that is withdrawn, that is kind of ascetic, the person that like doesn't look at the sunrise or whatever it is. But in reality, the totality of the spiritual temperament should be attuned to the beauty in all of its different manifestations as ways of praising God. That's why I say we sometimes, I use this example a lot, and we sometimes lose sight of the forest because of the trees. I mean, let me give you a very concrete example. There is a great mitzvah, if it's possible, to daven shachris kevasikin. Davening shachris kevasikin means you want to begin the Shmona Esrei exactly with the rise of the sun. So you have to begin davening a half an hour beforehand, so you hit it with the sunrise. Now, the purpose of this is that you should become part of the universe giving thanks to God. There is this idea that when the sun is rising to perform another day of service, it is praising the Almighty. And you become part of that symphony by getting connected to the panorama of nature. And that is why, the shachris is when the sun rises and mincha is when the sun goes down. and Mariv are the stars and the moon. All of this is supposed to inspire us. Now, Baruch Hashem, people who daven Kavasikin, and I do not, so I'm not in that madrega, are doing a great mitzvah. But we mess it up. You go to Vasikin, and people are staring at the atomic clock to see, is it five, you know, and I know this person firsthand, that if you're 1/10 of a second late, people start yelling and screaming. Now, they did not have an atomic clock in the time of Chazal. And the whole concept is, you don't worship the sun, God forbid, but you're inspired by the sunrise. Instead, you're fixated on a little clock. You're not becoming part of nature. You're not worshiping Hashem with the universe. Because we're fixated on the halachic rule, but we don't have a sense of what that rule is. That I become one with everything. So a spiritual person is attuned to cycles, to rhythms, to stars. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avraham, your children will be as numerous as the stars of the heaven. It's unfortunate we have so much like pollution or light pollution. I remember when I was a child, I looked up at the sky, I saw three stars or something. So, what's this business? Stars of the heaven. But then, many years later, I was in Amuka, totally dark, deep valley. I said, hey, there are like a million stars up there. But if your head is simply looking at the ground, you don't see the stars, you don't see the moon, you don't see the sun, you don't see any of these things. You're blinding yourself to the beauties and the magnificence that Hashem put into the world. I'm glad you asked that. So the question is, Pirkei Avos seems to say, don't look at that stuff. Pirkei Avos says, if a person is learning, first of all, let's talk about when he's learning. And he stops his learning, and he says, how beautiful is that tree? He deserves to die. Now, let me point out that the Hasidim have a beautiful interpretation. They say, you know what the problem is? He stopped his learning. He didn't connect it to his Avodas Hashem. They're serving God. And then, oh, I love nature. But when your love of nature is connected to your learning of Torah, then it becomes a high worship. That's indeed what it says. Yeah.
Silly question. Business with the rainbow. Ever since I learned about the rainbow and that it was a siman, and then you read that you're not supposed to look at the rainbow.
Yeah.
Look away all my love of looking at rainbows. I
do understand the frustration, but you know, if you go to a gas station, you can get a good approximation. But part of it is you're making a very good point. That is, there are things that are so holy, they are so representative of God's divine presence, that indeed, you know, looking at the Shekhinah, looking at the Kisei HaKavod is also something of overwhelming beauty. But there are limits to what we can do, right? There are limits. And indeed, that is the life of a Jew. That there are going to be limits. Okay. Alrighty. So this is the meaning. So this is according to the Rambam and Hasidism, combining two thoughts here. This is not yet the Vilna Gaon. Of knowing God in all of your ways. Don't create dichotomies. That is why, just to give you an example, as great as an outstanding gadol as the Chidah, many of you may have heard of the Chidah, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, great, great Sephardic gadol who lived around 250 years ago. He was a very interesting person. He was a great posek in halacha. He was a great makobol. He was a great mashulach. He actually was quite successful collecting money for the mostos in Eretz Yisrael. And because of this, he was a traveler. He didn't get to the United States. That was a little before that. But he got to a lot of Europe and the like. And in addition to his many svarim, and it's amazing how he was able to write svarim when he was on the road so much, he also wrote travelogues of what he saw, that when he was in London, he made a point of going to the zoo. And he writes about the zoo, the different animals, and the like, because he said a great person must be attuned to everything. Right, so that's b'chol drachecha to'eyu. Now, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, adds a different level to this. Again, the basic level is extremely important, the fundamental principle. And he points out, one of the things the Vilna Gaon is always very attuned to is the use of synonyms. Because he says there's no such thing in Lashon HaMikra, in Lashon of Tanakh, the Gra says, there is no such thing as synonyms. So for example, here, in this pasuk, it says, in all of your drachim, in all of your ways, you shall know him, and he shall straighten out your paths. Now what is a derech, which I translated as a way, and what is an orach, that I said is a path? They seem to mean more or less the same thing. So the Graz Shita is that whenever you see different words that seem to mean the same thing, you try to show that they mean different things. This view was then taken on and even expanded, because we don't have the Graz commentaries in all of Tanakh, but if you've learned the Malbim, you know the Malbim, who lived in the 19th century, Rabbi Chiyo Michal, Weiser was the last name, but he's known as the Malbim, almost went to an extreme, that every single word has to have a different meaning. We don't accept the idea of elegance of expression. Now, I do want to point out, just as an aside, that there are Meforshei HaMikra who do not necessarily accept that as a predicate. They do talk about something called Kefel HaInyan B'Milim Shonot. That means that sometimes if the Yeshayo talks about Simcha V'Sason, we don't have to say there's a difference between this and that, but rather there's a certain repetition to express joy and poetry and the like. But the Vilna Gaon and the Malbim totally reject that. Every synonym has to be different. So what is the difference between a derech and an orach? Right, a derech means a way, and an orach is a way, like orchos tzaddikim. So the Gra says, a derech is analogous to a main highway, the highway that everybody is expected to traverse, the main road. Orach are the side roads that branch off, that are only suitable for some people. That's why everybody, you know, everybody is going to be on King George sometime during the week. But whether you're going to go to the little side streets, that depends if you live there or you're going to see somebody or buy something, right? So the derech is the derech hamelech, that's called the highway, the king's road, and the orach are the roads that branch off. So according to the Gra, he reads the pasuk in a different way than the Rambam. Again, it's not to the exclusion. All of these interpretations are good. He says that in life, there are numerous specific questions that we will have in life. How to raise our children, who to choose as a marriage partner, where to live, where to work. And these are not answers that have a clear psak in halacha. These are not definite yeses or nos. You can't go even to a chash of a rav who doesn't know you and ask a shaila like this. I can ask a shaila what happens if my bowls or my spoons get mixed up. I can ask a shaila, can I use baby wipes on Shabbos? Can I soak my contact lenses? Now, granted, these are machloksim, these are arguments in halacha, but they are objective type questions. In other words, it doesn't depend on your history or your feelings or your background or whatever it is. So the Vilna Gaon says, derech refers to the issues in life that are common to everybody. How to keep Shabbos, how to keep kosher. Right? These are objective questions. That's a derech. Orach refers to the individual personal dilemmas that a person has in life for which there may or may not be a concrete answer. And a person has to struggle with that, to try to develop it, to try to understand it, and the like. So, what the pasuk is saying according to the Gra is, if you seek to serve God in all of your drachim, you conscientiously do mitzvos to the best of your ability, Hashem will give you the insight to deal with the dilemmas you will have in life. That will be a gift that the Almighty will give you. Right? See how the pasuk phrases? If you seek to know God in all of your drachim, that's the common things that Jews do, then Hashem will give you the reward of being able to navigate the dilemmas and the quandaries that we face in our life. In fact, that is essentially why we might go to a gadol or a tzaddik for an etzah. You know, you might say, well, why does he know better than me? The answer is because the very fact that he is more connected to, by serving Hashem with the mitzvos and the Torah that he's learning, will give him a gift from Hashem to be able to navigate the personal dilemmas and quandaries that people have. Now, he then goes on and says something that sounds a little bit of a drush. It's not even pashat pshat, but it's fascinating how the Vilna Gaon brings in what some might think is a bit of a Hasidic thought. And he says, Da'ehu, know him, right? Know him. That's a little bit of an unusual phrase. You refer to God as a him. I mean, putting aside the gender issue, just say, B'chol derechecha, da es Hashem. It should say God's name, da es Hashem. Why da'ehu? So the Gra says that you could read it, this is not pashat pshat at all, but this is a drush, the Gra says. You can read it as if it says, da, hey, and vav. No, the hey, and the vav. What is the hey and the vav? The hey is the written Torah, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. The vav is the oral Torah, the six orders of the Mishnah. So, da, hey vav, if you strive to master the hey vav, the basics of the Torah, both in terms of learning it and in terms of doing it, and as a result, you are following the derech that Am Yisrael is supposed to follow, Hashem will give you the insight to navigate the torturous byways and side streets and dilemmas that every human being has in terms of what do I do with my children, where do I work, where do I live, where do I daven, whatever the shail is, what do I do for parnasa? These are not answers that are in the Shulchan Aruch necessarily. You need insight. And by the way, the insight has to come, that's another pasuk in Mishlei, the insight has to come from within you. In other words, one should not just delegate authority. I remember many, many years ago, I had an occasion to ask Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky a shaila. And I thought it would be 5 minutes, but you know, he literally gave me 3 hours. But what was fascinating about talking to Rav Yaakov, was the only time I met him, I never met him before or after, was that he had a constant interest in trying to think what I thought about it. I was not that old, I was like 20 years old. And the whole discussion was direct, well, based on what I thought, this is what it should be. In other words, his purpose was not to tell me what to do. His purpose was to give me the ability to figure out what it is that was right for me. And I've heard that many other people have had that same experience. And a true Rebbe, a true teacher, and to some degree even a good parent, is not so much there. I'm not talking about little kids. Little kids you got to sometimes give an order to. But when you're dealing with an adult, is to simply enable the person to discover what is true for them. And according to the Gra, that's what the Pasuk is saying. You know Hashem by following the derech of Torah and mitzvahs. And the vav, v'hu yiyasher, Hashem will straighten out your orchot, those dilemmas that you have for which there is no fixed answer. You will be in the right place. You won't get lost. Huh? He will guide you. He will give you the ability to know where to go. You will have that. It'll be almost an intuition. There's an intuition that is sharpened by a life of Torah and Ruchnius. In fact, in a mystical way, let me point out, the Vilna Gaon's greatest disciple, as you know, was Rav Chaim of Volozhin, the Rav of Volozhin. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner wrote a sefer that probably is almost, I could say without exaggeration to some degree, that what Tanya is for Chabad, the Nefesh HaChaim is for the yeshiva world. Nefesh HaChaim is treated the way Lubavitchers look at the Tanya. Both, they were written at the same time, by the way. They're both very, very great, great svarim. And the Nefesh HaChayim discusses an interesting issue that people sometimes raise, and that is, so much of what boys or men learn in yeshiva and kollel seems to have very little to do directly with spirituality. You open up a Gemara, so it may talk about an ox scoring cow. It may talk about a chicken that lays an egg on Shabbos. It talks about liars and cheaters and adultery and you know, how do you prove this? How do you prove that? I mean, you're dealing with all sorts of unsavory characters you would never want to admit into your house. And you're spending all of these time, you know, hours and hours and hours, years and years and years, analyzing, you know, cheating and lying and stealing and obscure questions that may never happen. Why don't we sit and learn about God and learn about spirituality? So Rav Chaim Volozhiner basically says, and actually the Tanya says exactly the same thing, it's very, very fascinating, that the idea is that because the Torah, including the Torah Shebaal Peh, is the concretization, the concrete expression of God's will, and God's will and God's essence is one, because in God there is no disunity. So my will and myself might be two different things, but in God everything is one. So when you learn anything about God's will, you are connected to God. Once you're connected to God, that changes your whole perception of everything. So I don't have to learn directly about how to raise children, at least systematically. By learning about the ox that gores the cow, at least if one's heart is open, one can become a better parent. Now again, you may say that doesn't always work, and indeed it doesn't always work, and one would have to analyze why it doesn't work. The theory sounds nicer than the practice. I acknowledge that. But at least the theory is, if one learns Torah with purity of heart and sincerity of motivation, they are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's exactly what the Pasuk is saying. Hashem will give you the guidance in all of those areas. And indeed, all I can tell you is that, at least on the level of the greatest Gedolim, at least at that level, indeed, although they did not necessarily go to seminars on Shalom Bayis and raising children, but, you know, they were able to do it, that they were able to get the insight of being able to do it. All right, so this is the Gra. Now, he adds a little bit like this. Because you'll notice we use the pronoun twice. Derachaha da'ehu. In all of your ways, know him. Vahu. And he will straighten out your path. Say Hashem. Why are we avoiding Hashem once again? So the Vilna Gaon says, this is the combination. Take the word vahu, putting aside the first vav, which is just a conjunction and. Who is hey vav aleph. Now the hey and the vav is already what you did. You learn and keep the chumash, the five chamisha chumshei Torah, and the vav are the six orders of the Mishnah. But if you do what you do, there will be the aleph, the one God from above, will join himself into what you did, the hey and the vav. And together, you will have the ability to deal with your problem. In other words, Hashem becomes the third partner here. For who? The hey and the vav is what you did. And then the aleph joins that hey and the vav. The aleph is the one God. And that will take you where you need to go. But again, the concept is that Hashem gives his gifts to those who did their share. You do your share of learning Torah, doing mitzvahs. Then Hashem comes in and blesses you, and gives you understanding. But if we shirk our share, we don't do our share, we don't have the hay and the vav, then we don't necessarily get the aleph that joins us, right? So this is an example of how we can look at these verses in a deeper level, as it were, and the like. Now, if we turn all the way to Perek Yates, chapter 19, we're now going to see a second level of analysis. Again, this is Perek Yates, chapter 19, verse 14, Pasuk Yadalit. And I did mention the pasuk at the end of last week. And the pasuk says, Bayis Vahon Nachalas Avos. A house or a home, and hon is treasure. Right? There's the house and there's the treasure in the house. Furniture, money, whatever it is. Bayis Vahon Nachalas Avos. That is an inheritance from your forefathers. Right? Mom and dad or grandpa can leave me a nice house and even a fortune. But Umei Hashem, here it's the Shem Havayah, here God's name is mentioned. Mei Hashem Isha Maskelis. Maskelis is Seicha. But a wise, discerning wife only comes from God. Meaning, once again, this is like the Shevach of Eishes Chayil at the end of Mishlei, meaning Abba and Ima, mommy and daddy, cannot guarantee a man a good wife. The other way around, if the woman is bought by promises of wealth and everything else, that's probably a sign. Although there's a famous joke they like to say, you know, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to appoint judges, so he had all these qualifications that were so great. They have to be wise, and they have to be understanding, and they have to be fearers of God, and they have to be haters of bribes. How can you find such great people? So the answer is, for the right price, you can get anybody. That's what they said. You know, but the truth is, an Isha Maskelis, you don't get for the right price. The right price has to be the midos that a person has. That's the right price. Everything else not. So again, the simple meaning, lefi pshuto. And again, I want to point out, deeper meanings do not replace simple meanings. Simple meanings are totally valid. That the greatest gift that a man can have is that of a wife that is his ezer kenegdo, his partner in life, as it were. And therefore it is greater than the house and the wealth that one gets from the avos, is the Isha Maskelis. But Isha Maskelis is not a self-defined term. Isha Maskelis doesn't say Isha Tova, doesn't even say Isha Yiras Hashem, as it says in Eishes Chayil, Isha Yiras Hashem. It uses the specific quality of Isha Maskelis. Now Maskelis is of course connected to the word Seichel. But again, we have to be careful not to take modern Hebrew and read it into biblical Hebrew. Seichel does not refer in Mishlei to being smart. We're not talking about IQ, we're not talking about PhD in chemistry and the like. But Seichel refers primarily to the spiritual capacity of understanding what is good and what is bad. The idea of seeing certain paths in life are not the way to go. This comes from what Chazal talk about, Bina Yisera. Right? Women have what is called a Bina Yisera, which is really understood as a form of intuition as to what will be good for the home, what will not be good. In fact, there's even a statement in Chazal that says that women have a Tzoras Ayin. Now, Tzoras Ayin, Biorchem, means they have a certain like selfishness or a certain desire not to serve Orchim. What does that mean? It's kind of the opposite way. The Isha is a Balas Chesed. So it's brought down that Tzoras Ayin is meant in a very positive way. A woman has a sense of when will something be disruptive to the needs of the family and the children. It's not, God forbid, a selfishness. But it's a notion that certain types of interventions, like, you know, a man might be happy-go-lucky, sure, come on over, you know, he may invite, you know, 20 drunken people over, or whatever it is, because the man, okay, this is actually the idea, the man focuses on, yeah, these are generalizations, the man focuses on one thing at a time, right? We can't focus on two things at a time. That's too complicated. So, when a man sees people who need a place for Shabbos, the man only thinks, ah, hachnasas orchim, great! The woman's ability is multitasking and balancing. And therefore, the woman says, well, yes, hachnasas orchim is wonderful, But we have to see how it's going to play out with time for the children. And that's why men sometimes get frustrated, because they come home with real enthusiastic plans. And their wife always comes up with like some negative reason why it's no good. Now, again, it's not good to be negative, and one should be positive and supportive, and of course. But the negativity that sometimes is expressed by a spouse is because women are indeed said to have the greater capacity to see how things interact with each other. In fact, even the phrase that is sometimes pejorative, women are datan kalos. Now, datan kalos, if you translate it literally, is an insult. Datan kalos, meaning they are flighty. Their mind goes from one thing to another. They can't concentrate. On a deeper level is actually very, very significant. It is the ability to go from one thing to another, which means there may, again, I realize I'm generalizing. I'm talking about tendencies. I'm not talking about individuals. Meaning, there may be a lack of intensity and concentration on a particular thing. So when you ask the question, who are better, men or women, which is kind of a stupid question, I mean, the answer is that everyone has unique qualities. The masculine Mila will be intensity and focus. And the feminine Mila is the ability to see a larger picture, even at the expense of not always having that focus. That's why, you know, you don't interrupt a man when he's learning Gemara, and you don't interrupt a man when he's watching a football game. It's all the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing, but it's the same tendency of focusing and getting into something. And this is why the concept of the maskeles is referring to the person who can balance and see how the pieces fit in. You know, this is very interesting. There was a path-breaking book in the 1970s written by a psychologist, Carol Gilligan. And this was the height of the feminist movement, or at least the first generation of the feminist movement, where feminists were arguing that men and women are exactly the same, and if there's any difference, it is only a matter of culture and the like. So she wanted to show. She was a woman, of course, and she was a professor at Harvard University. And she wanted to show that the differences between men and women start at a very, very early age. They seem to be virtually ingrained. And one of the ways she showed this was she administered a test to 5 and 6 year old boys and girls, and she correlated how they answered it. And the test was basically this. You're a parent, and you have a child that's very, very sick, and the child might die unless they get medicine. And there's only one drugstore in the city that has the medicine, and the drugstore is closed for the evening. What do you do? So every boy, without question, said you take a rock and you break the window. Now, that's a perfectly good answer. I mean, a child is dying. Of course you break a window. But the girls said, be sure to leave a note and maybe leave some money, whatever it is. In other words, the concept was that the male tended to identify the most critical, important issue and not think of anything else. And the woman, while she properly identified the critical issue, no, didn't forget about the other aspects as well. So Isha Maskeles is the idea of keeping everything in mind. And that's a gift from Hashem. That is a gift from Hashem. That is the Isha Maskeles. So it's not simply the quality of Yiras Hashem in the abstract, but it's the ability to understand that you can't achieve important goals by neglecting other important goals. You have to find a way to balance all of these things together. And that's what seichel is. Seichel is the balancing of different things, where you don't go to one extreme, as a man might be wont to do, by being carried away by enthusiasms. Okay. All of this is on the level of pashut pshat. So even in pashut pshat is not so pashut. There's a lot of wisdom in the simple, literal meaning of the verse. But now let me share with you the Vilna Gaon, who tends to once again go beneath the surface. And he says the following. He says that bayit can be a symbolic reference to the mitzvos of the Torah that create our house in this world and ultimately our house in Olam Haba. And he says specifically, bayit includes mitzvahs aseh, because that's the positive way we build our house, right? We build our house by the mitzvos that we do. And it also represents fulfilling the negative commandments, because fulfilling negative commandments prevents your house from being destroyed. Meaning, the positive bricks of my life are my mitzvot aseh. But when I violate the negatives, it's like I'm introducing termites or radon gas or whatever it would be. So the mitzvot aseh, build the house, and the keeping the mitzvot lo aseh, protect the house from rot and spoilage. So that's bayit. Bayit includes mitzvot aseh and mitzvot lo aseh. Home, treasure, refers to learning of Torah, because that is the treasure with which you fill your house. So what do we therefore mean that the house and the treasure we get from our forefathers? So here the Gra brings, this is a Kabbalistic explanation, that we know that Avraham Avinu represents the divine attribute of loving kindness, love. Yitzchak represents the divine attribute of fear of Hashem. Now it's brought down in the Zohar that positive mitzvos emanate from the attribute of love. Therefore it was through the sechus of Avraham Avinu that we were zoche to have positive ways of serving Hashem and showing our love. And it is through the midah of Yitzchak's yira, his fear, that we are given the negative commandments, which is the way we show our fear of God. Fear meaning reverence. I don't mean fear of punishment. Right? You understand this? Positive commandments show love of God. Negative commandments show fear of God. In fact, there's a famous Ramban that says, the reason why in halacha, if there is a conflict between a positive commandment and a negative commandment, I can only do a positive by transgressing a negative, the positive overrides the negative. An example would be, a bris on the eighth day that falls out on Shabbos, even though doing a bris milah is a sin, it's chilul Shabbos, but the positive overrides the negative. Now, if Shabbos is not the eighth day, if you're doing the bris on the tenth day and it's Shabbos, you cannot do it, because there the conflict is avoidable. I could do this on the 11th day. There's nothing special about the tenth day. But when it's the eighth day, this is a very famous rule in the Gemara, aseh, positive commandments, doche, push aside, lo aseh, negative commandments. Ramban says in Parshas Yisro, why does the positive override the negative? Because love of Hashem is a greater madrega than fear of Hashem, and therefore the expressions of love override the expressions of fear. So the bias we get from Avram and Yitzchak, the mitzvot aseh of love we get from Avram that represented love, and the mitzvot lo aseh of fear we get from Yitzchak that represented fear. Hon is Torah that we get in the merit of Yaakov, who represents the power of Torah learning. He spent 14 years in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. So now, look what the pasuk says, allegorically speaking. Bayis v'hom, the home, the house of mitzvahs lo aseh and mitzvah aseh. And the Torah, which is the treasure. Nachalas avos, we get that in the merit of our patriarchs, quite literally. So avos doesn't just mean your parents, it means Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram and Yitzchak gave us the mitzvah saseh and the mitzvah slo saseh. And Yaakov gave us the koach of Torah. But what is the Isha Maskela? So here it's interesting. The Gra, because the Gra is giving a metaphorical interpretation of this whole verse, it is going back to what we read in Perek Gimel, that when you follow what you inherited from your forefathers, the Isha Maskelis is symbolically kind of the spirit within you that will give you the capacity to balance. So once again, it's that same idea. If I take the legacy I was given from the others and I keep it properly, then Hashem will give me the seicha, the insight, to navigate the quandaries of life. In this connection, you know, all of you know that Pirkei Avos says the world stands, right, on Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Omeit, Ala Torah, Ala Voda, V'al Gemilas Chasadim. So it's brought to them, all the Mefarshim say, Avraham represents the pillar of Gemilas Chesed. And Yitzchak, who was a Korban, represents the pillar of divine service. And Yaakov represents the pillar of Torah. In fact, there's a word from the Chafetz Chaim that we read in yesterday's Parsha, that the angel of Esav tried to destroy Yaakov. And the question is, why does the angel destroy Yaakov? Why don't we find a similar angel trying to destroy Avram or Yitzchak? And the Chafetz Chaim's answer is that the Yetzer Hara is perfectly happy to let Jews do mitzvot as long as there will not be intergenerational continuity. Let them fool around, do good things, it's not going to last. But when it's going to last, the Yetzer Hara wants to destroy it. So says the Chafetz Chaim, a Yiddishkeit that is based on the chesed of Avraham, as wonderful as it is, the Yetzer Hara will let us do that because it's going to collapse. It's not going to go to the next generation. And a Yiddishkeit even based on davening and korbanos is not going to last. It's only when there's Torah learning that you have the ability to transmit to the newer generation that the Yetzer Hara has to fight. And again, if you look at the history of Judaism in America, you actually see how true these words were. You know, the initial thing that many Jews did when they came to the United States, these were primarily assimilated German Jews, if you're talking about the first major wave of Aliyah in the middle of the 19th century, like 1840s, 50s, these were very wealthy families, but largely assimilated. The Warburg, you know, the famous old money Jewish families, I don't know how many are around now, a lot of them are not Jewish anymore. So their main agenda was social welfare. Many Jewish hospitals were founded. Today you don't need a Jewish hospital in Chutz Laaretz per se, but in those days you did. So many, many Jewish hospitals, mutual aid societies, burial societies. Chesed, very important. But a lot of their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, intermarried, assimilated, just disappeared. And then the next generation built magnificent synagogues. I remember in my youth, they don't build shows like that anymore. Big, beautiful stained glass edifices. Magnificent, magnificent shows. If you go to any inner city in the United States, you will see they are now churches, unfortunately. That's why one of the reasons they don't build shows so fancy anymore. So, Torah learning came relatively late to the United States. I mean, there were isolated pockets, and even before there were yeshivas, there were heroic people who remained firm. One shouldn't forget the heroism and mesiras nefesh of people who remained Shomer Shabbos, even if they had to get a new job every week. And these were great, great people. Irving Bunim in Baltimore, there were a number of people like this. But they were really miyuta de miyuta, very, very, very small. That made them more heroic. But they were very, very small. To the extent that Yiddishkeit has a flourishing in the United States, it only came with the growth of yeshivas. Torah Amsora found in day schools in every city that had more than 5,000 Jews. And then Yeshiva Gedolos and Community Kollelim. And then, and listen, there's plenty of, not everybody is from the United States, certainly, or in Israel for that matter, but to the extent there's been a flourishing and a growth, it only comes with Torah learning. Now, this doesn't mean the other two pillars are not important. Pirkei Avos says the world needs three pillars. if all you had was Torah, that would not be good. The world would be defective. But what is suggested is, the Chafetz Chaim says, that from Torah we can come to Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim, because we learn what the Torah wants us to do. But if you just have Gemilas Chasadim and Avodah without linking it to Torah, the next generation is going to wonder, like, you know, why am I doing all this? And that's what the Chafetz Chaim says, and that is why the Sarah Shalesov is specifically against the Koach of Torah. Now, the Chafetz Chaim, I'll end with this, the Chafetz Chaim then has another thought, which would be very funny if it wouldn't be sad. The Chafetz Chaim says, well, the Koach of Esav wants to destroy Yaakov, who represents Torah. But he did not succeed. He could not destroy Yaakov, who represented Torah. Because Torah will always be in Am Yisrael. There will always be people who will learn Torah, even if they're starving, even if they're persecuted, even if they're in a concentration camp or a Siberian camp or whatever it is. But you'll notice that the Sarah Shalesa did have a partial victory. And that is, Yaakov is limping on his thigh. The Zohar HaKadosh says, just as the thigh supports the body, the thigh represents the financial support of Torah. So to mix the anatomical metaphor, the Achilles heel of Torah learning is the dislocated thigh. And that is to say that the Chafetz Chaim says the curse of Esav is that Torah will always suffer financial difficulties. Ad kedei kach, that the Chafetz Chaim said, if there's any yeshiva that does not have financial problems, one must be suspicious of whether it is an authentic repository of Torah knowledge. Because that was the partial nitzachon of the Sarah Shalesov. Which really is, if you think about it, really is quite amazing. Because if you think about the billions and billions of dollars that are spent on the most frivolous, to be best, that's being kind, most frivolous entertainments and the money, there's more than enough money to support Torah in the world. There's no question about that. And yet, all the money goes to other things. Why is it going to all those other things? Why doesn't it go to this? The answer is, this was the koach that the Sarah Shalesa brought into the world. Now, one might say, so the next time a yeshiva or the OU or a Sameach, you know, needs some money, I'm going to say, sorry, you're cursed. You're not supposed to get anything. That's Esav's victory. Well, keep in mind, very poshut, that a curse is not the same as a commandment. I'll give you an example. You know, when anesthesia was introduced for childbirth in the 19th century, there were Christian theologians, all of whom were men, who said, women are not allowed to use anesthesia in childbirth because it was the curse of Chava that you shall suffer giving birth. How dare you try to minimize that suffering? That's what it said. That's what they said. Now, what is the Jewish answer? The Jewish answer is, Hashem created nature that way, but He gives us reshus to overcome those tendencies. Meaning Hashem did give us, you know, a difficulty to contend with. But He didn't forbid us, just like any illness, right? Hashem, you know, might be the source of why a person gets sick. We don't know why. But certainly we're obligated, in whatever way we can, to seek refuah. One isn't even allowed to say, Hashem, you made me sick, you heal me. Hashem is the source of healing, but we are mechuyev to seek medical advice. At least until the doctor says it's hopeless. If the doctor, God forbid, says it's hopeless, then I have to say, Hashem, I did what I can. It's up to you. But we are mechuyev to do ishtadlus. That's the way it works in Parnasa, and the same thing. So therefore, the concept is, the fact that support of Torah is going to be weak and precarious is not an excuse for us. It's just an obstacle that we're mechuyev to overcome. So we'll continue with this pasuk. But again, bias v'hon. The bias is the mitzvah saseh and lo saseh that come in the merit of Avram and Yitzchak. Avram, that is chesed, is the source of the mitzvahs of love. Yitzchak, that is gevura, is the source of the mitzvahs of fear. Yaakov is the source of Torah learning. All of that we get from the avos. The isha maskelis is the inner conscience within a person, according to the Gra. So it's not referring to a flesh and blood woman, that gives the person the ability to balance and prioritize, and that's why he's going to connect it to B'chol Drechecha Do'eyu, which made the same point, and we'll see exactly the interweaving. So next week I'm going to continue to discuss this Pasuk Bayis V'Hon, but if you want, you can read Perek Aleph of Mishlei. Maybe we'll begin that as well.
Particularly sunny today, I don't know. Something happened. Not that that's the yikar, but I invite my grandson, Baruch Hashem, Tillin. And do you have a sofer that you would particularly? I kind of don't see.
You got some serious room? Or in Kutchett?
I'm here, but he's not here. But I want to.
So you want the Tillin written here?
I want to.
You know, I
there's so many wonderful technicians. I feel like I don't want to be. I just want someone who mamash loves doing this.
Let me try to find out.
Yeah.
I know so from the Chutzlars more than I know here. But,
I know. I would too. But I think it's really special to him that Bobby is sending it for his show. You know, so that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want to be. I feel like you're ready.